You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
To the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 43rd week of the year from October 21st to October 27th, covering Numbers 32:20 to Numbers 35:11. So we're almost at the end of the book of Numbers. So at the end of last week, we were reading a section of the book of Numbers that described how when the Israelites were approaching the Holy Land from they were in basically what is now modern-day Jordan, the land of Moab, and they were going to cross the Jordan going west into the Holy Land, that the tribes of Gad and Reuven wanted to settle on the eastern side of the River Jordan, which was not originally in the area that God had designated as being the Holy Land. So there was an argument, or a discussion, maybe you could say, between Moses and the leaders of these two tribes, where he said, you can't settle here and let the other 10 tribes go and fight a war to conquer the Holy Land while you sitting here, tending to your flocks. And so the tribes of Gad and Reuven say, no, you misunderstood. We fully intend to go and fight with you. Then we just want to come back here and settle down after the conquest is over. So in Numbers 32:20 to 32:23, it reads, Moses said to them, meaning to the tribes of Gad and Reuven, if you do this thing, if you arm yourselves before God for the battle, and every armed man among you shall cross the Jordan before God until he drives out his enemies before him, and the land shall be conquered before God, and then you shall return. Then you shall be vindicated before God and from Israel, and this land shall be a heritage for you before God. Meaning, you can come back to this area after you have participated in the conquest of the Holy Land. the tribes of Gad and Reuven actually had said that they will be out in the front. They'll be the vanguard of the advancing force. And Moses actually responds by reminding them that they need to fight not out of compassion for their brethren, but rather for the will of God. And he repeats the phrase before God 5 times in fewer than 100 words. Their first concern should be to carry out the will of God, not have compassion or appear to have compassion for the others. Compassion is subjective and potentially flexible. Obeying the will of God is more reliable. So it's better that these two tribes go into the conquest as following the will of God, not to show that they're committed to fighting in this army. It's better to be doing the will of God. And this applies to recovery as well. If we make a promise to someone in recovery, we should think, are we basing a serious promise on a fragile emotional state or a desire to look a certain way, or are we trying to understand God's will for us? And if we think more about the latter, about God's will for us, that will probably make for a more affecting and enduring promise. And if we can't do that, then maybe we shouldn't make the promise. Numbers 33:1 says, these are the journeys of the children of Israel, who went forth from the land of Egypt according to their legions, under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Now, it may be a cliche to say that recovery is like a journey, but the truth is, if it's not like a journey, you haven't gone anywhere. And like the children of Israel who went forth from the land of Egypt, we too have escaped the slavery of addiction. We enter our own personal wilderness, so to speak, and begin a long march to our own promised land, whatever that is. And we are not alone. like the Israelites who are under the hand of Moses and Aaron, we are under the hand of God and his prophets. The last section of the book of Numbers, which we're reading now, recounts the journey of the Israelites. And in a lot of ways, it's like a fourth step. The fourth step is at least partially a chronicle of where we've been in our lives, in emotional and spiritual terms, if not physical. Looking back at where we come from is an important part of recovery. We need to understand where we were, who we were, if we are to move forward and build a better life in sobriety. So continuing with Numbers 33:1, these are the journeys of the children of Israel who went forth from the land of Egypt according to their legions under the hand of Moses and Aaron. This part of the Bible, this section, records 42 places that the Israelites went to during their wanderings in the wilderness for 40 years. Some of the places, I'm not going to read them all to you now, some of the places listed in the chronology here are not mentioned earlier. So this is an important, just a little slight side note, very important to understand that the Bible, the first five books of the Bible, are not always written in chronological order. That is a really important concept, that you might read something later in the book that you didn't know earlier. According to the commentators, this is a complete list of where the Israelites traveled. And some of the places mentioned in these verses were not notable at the time, so they were not mentioned in earlier chapters. This is a very profound idea we can learn from this. So that what we're saying here, what the commentators are saying, is that now, after 40 years, they can look back and say, remember when we stopped at this place, which didn't seem very important at the time? Well, now that we've been going for 40 years, we now know it was important for us as a people. And for us too, in recovery, we tell our stories over and over again, and our fourth step in this process should be exhausted. We list our complete journey through addiction. We go back through locations, so to speak, that we might have forgotten to list earlier. And we go back and add them to our fourth step. We add them to our stories. And maybe the significance of a certain place or experience becomes clearer when we look back on it. And it may be more important than we realized at the time. In fact, at the time when something happened, you might have had no awareness that it was important at all. You might have very little recollection of it anyway. But maybe in retrospect, we can see. And I can tell you from my own story that there was a moment that at the time it bothered me, but I didn't really get that it was a bottom. It was an experience I had when I was drunk, and I made a bad impression on some people who I wanted to make a good impression on, and I remember being upset about it, but looking back on it, it was really a bottom, or it should have been a bottom. It was a big warning sign to me that my drinking problem was starting to affect my life in ways that I couldn't control. And so in the same way that we can look back later and say, well, you know, that event should be given more weight in our personal stories. And so we maybe now, like the Israelites, going back over these 42 locations, we can see that there was a reason we did something. And this is going to go the other way, too, that maybe something positive happened to you and you didn't realize it. I've had that as well, where you realize that maybe someone made a positive impression on you. It didn't really register at the time. And now you can see it looking back. We need to create our own complete list of our travels, so to speak, through addiction to get sober. That's what the fourth step is all about. So just another comment on this verse. When it says, these are the journeys of the children of Israel, the commentators say that the names of these 42 places that the Israelites stayed in the wilderness somehow contain the 42 letters of one of the secret names of God. Now, so I just want to digress, and because, I mean, this is interesting, I think, but I don't want to get too far off of our topic. But according to the biblical commentators, there are, and Jewish mysticism, there are certain secret names of God that nobody now knows anymore. They've been lost. But at the time, people like Moses or whatever knew them. And there are many different names of God. And in fact, if you read an actual Hebrew, a Jewish Torah, it doesn't, the name of God isn't written there. It just says the name, Hashem, or it has a series of Hebrew letters that are not pronounced out loud, four letters. But there's also other names of God. And so the names of these locations, if you knew, and I don't know how many hundreds of letters there are in these 42 names, if you could somehow pick out the right letters in each word, you would spell out the 42-letter name of God, which, according to tradition, has some spiritual power. Like, if you can say this name out loud, it has spiritual power. So there's a wisdom, though, in this insight into this name that can help us in recovery. And you could think of it like this, that our comings and goings in life may seem random and unimportant. Yet, if we seek conscious contact with God, we may be able to find or experience a holy connection, even in the most mundane of moments. It meaning that the name of God, so to speak, can be present in our personal wanderings. You know, and it's sort of what we make of it. You could think of it like that. You know, go to the dry cleaners and pick up your dry cleaning. Do you want to put God's name into that experience? Well, you could if you wanted to. Depends how you act. Can you be nice to somebody there? Can you act in a sober way? So you've just added a little letter of God's name, so to speak, into a random experience. Or looking back on your history of your life, can you see that your experiences might have touched on the will of God for you? And that's if we choose for it to be there. It's up to us. Numbers 33:2 says, Moses wrote their goings for according to their journeys at the bidding of God. And these were the journeys according to their goings forth. Now, of course, we know this because at the end of the movie, The Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston reaches into a satchel and pulls out some paper scrolls and hands them to Joshua. So we know it has to be true that he wrote everything down. So Moses, God told Moses to keep a diary of their journeys, so to speak, which eventually became part of the Torah. The phrase, their journeys according to their goings forth, is repeated at the beginning and end of the sentence. The first use implies God's view of their travels, and the second implies the people's view. So it's first, Moses first writes the journeys of the Israelites from God's perspective, and the second from the people's perspective. According to the commentators, God, of course, had a specific reason. He wanted the people to move from place to place. God saw their movements as part of their spiritual progression towards worthiness to enter the promised land. He wanted them to grow during this 40-year period, during these 42 stops. The people, understandably but unfortunately, may have viewed each move as a disruption. Or maybe they became impatient with staying in one place for too long and wished to move before God commanded them. And there's a great parallel here to the journey of recovery. Think of it like this: God has a plan for us. We seldom understand it. Certainly, rarely, or not at all at the moment when it's unfolding. Our travels through sober experience may seem irritating, either rushed or boring and delayed or just confusing, right? Yet God is in charge, directing us towards serenity with a loving hand. We need to settle ourselves down and understand why things are happening to us. Then we will be open to spiritual growth and better recovery. Numbers 33:50-33:52 says, God spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, When you cross the Jordan to the land of Canaan, You shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land before you, and you shall destroy their prostration stones. All their molten images shall you destroy, and all their high places shall you demolish. So this is God's instruction to the Israelites when they're going to go and conquer the promised land. They're to drive out the inhabitants and destroy the mechanisms of idol worship that filled the land. And so the ancient Canaanites and Jebusites and people who lived in the Holy Land at the time were idol worshippers. And actually the understanding is that they had it was a quite advanced civilization as well. It was a sophisticated civilization with advanced idol worship and sophisticated idolatrous religions. So the Israelites were told to get rid of all of this idol worship paraphernalia, all the stones and trees and everything. And there is a similar idea in recovery. If we want to be sober and take up residence in our own promised land, so to speak, in sober life, we need to drive the inhabitants of our previous life away. And that usually means taking yourself to a new place, a new home, a new job, maybe new friends. In addition, we have to demolish the high places, the prostration stones, the idolatrous worship of our former life. What are our high places? I think we know the bars, the clubs, the location of downward companionship in places that glorify self-seeking behavior. Like idol worship, addiction involves elevating a self-serving activity like getting high or gambling or whatever your drug of choice was to being the most important thing in your life. The drive to feed our heads becomes an all-consuming religion, an empty religion of the self, an idolatrous passion, so to speak. And it has to be eradicated before we can get sober. God's presence cannot dwell where these idols still persist. Numbers 35:9-35:11 says, God spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you cross the Jordan to the land of Canaan, you shall designate cities for yourselves. Cities of refuge shall they be for you, and a killer shall flee there, one who takes a life unintentionally." So, just a very brief comment on what this is all about before we get into it. The religious law at the time was that if somebody was killed accidentally in your family, a relative, usually the oldest male relative, had to go and avenge that death. So if your brother was out working the fields and someone was chopping wood nearby and the axe blade flew off the axe and hit your brother in the head and killed him, you were bound, you had an obligation to go and kill the killer. And what God is saying is you can set up a city, certain cities, and there were a number of them in the Holy Land, where these accidental killers could go, and the person who was avenging their blood was not permitted to enter. And this concept is actually mentioned a number of times in the Torah, and it's an interesting concept in spiritually, but in recovery it's also, I think, a great metaphor. Now hopefully none of us have committed unintentional murder, although unfortunately we know that this has happened, right? I know people who've killed people in car drunken driving incidents. It's terrible. It's terrible for the people who got killed, and it's also terrible for the people who did it. They never really get over it. But in a perfect world, we would be able to ask for forgiveness instantly upon getting sober and get immediate forgiveness. And of course, we know things don't work out that way always. And sometimes people can never be forgiven, either because the person who they wronged is unable to forgive them, or doesn't want to, or is no longer alive, or whatever. So we need our own city of refuge, so to speak. We need a safe place that we can go and be safe and prepare to ask for forgiveness when we are spiritually prepared to ask and maybe to hear that the answer is no, or the answer is not yet. That's also an interesting thing we hear in recovery. People say, I really want to forgive you, but I'm just not ready. It's too soon. And, you know, the people we've hurt also need their space and time away from us. And so recovery can be like this city of refuge, this biblical city of refuge, a safe place where we can go and be separated from those we hurt, away from vengeance, as we get ready to make amends.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com